Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined on today's program by Dr. Darryl Rowe, Assistant Professor of Communication at Eastern New Mexico University in Portales. Since 2016, Dr. Rowe has focused much of his work on the influences that digital media exert on modern audiences. He focuses on political communication and data-driven analysis of media rhetoric, particularly on digital platforms such as Twitter.
You have one paper here where you look at tweets 100 days before the election, 100 days after the election. Another paper tracks the Twitter insults in the first year after the election.
Right.
And a third paper sort of steps back again and looks at 18 months of overall aggressive communication. And maybe we can start by talking about some of the themes that emerged from the data, like what this criticism looks like, what are some keywords that keep coming up again and again.
Yes, yes.
And also how he uses a balance of praise and criticism to advance his agenda. In light of all these different analyses that you've done on these different time periods and looking at a statistical analysis of the language used, what would you say are some of the themes that are emerging that have been consistent regardless of the specific topics of his tweets?
They're anti-opposition, so primarily anti-Democrat. Democrats as a group get ad hominem criticisms because of their opposition in Congress. They're labeled in various ways as obstructionist and resistance and not having the country's best interest in mind. In the paper that I looked at with the insults, I really thought, based on, you know, some of the Billy Bush recordings and things like that and prior behavior that we've seen with Stormy Daniels and such, that there would be a lot of anti-women rhetoric, literally misogynistic. And there was a fair amount of that, not as much as I expected to find, though. But primarily Hillary really got the brunt of it, and other female politicians and others got a little bit of that. And none of it's appropriate, of course. And Hillary was labeled as crooked, and that just continues and continues and continues. And to finally, we're maybe 2.5 years in getting past references to Hillary, but as if he couldn't say enough, it was Crooked Hillary, then he shortened it to Crooked H, then just CH, and recently I saw him, he tweeted something, he just said Crooked, according to Crooked. I was like, we know who you're talking about. I mean, that's like a schematic reference, though. I know who you're talking about. I shouldn't know who you're talking about, but I do know who you're talking about, and even if I don't think she's crooked, that message is there. It's constantly in my head now. It's a very salient reference to her that I'd have to then consciously tell myself, no, don't think that, don't go there. Just because one person says it doesn't make it true. Things get framed in sense of, this is about national security. This is about what's best in our country's economic needs for business. This is for our business to get better and stronger. American, MAGA. MAGA is a huge theme and always has been for him prior to the election. MAGA, Make America Great Again. It's often just tweeted as MAGA, now that we know what it stands for. People who are seen as promoting MAGA are praised. People that are seen as, or characterized, are framed as being anti-MAGA or criticized. But it doesn't take much for you to get into one or the other of those categories. What I've noticed in the tweets is that I haven't followed the responses to his tweets very far down. It gets ugly down there, folks. But if you look at what he tweeted, then you go down a little bit farther as to who responds. It doesn't take much for you to get a praise or an attaboy. To get into the anti-MAGA category doesn't take much either. You just sort of have to position yourself as being skeptical or wanting to reason about it or wanting to have more time to consider the options, and now you're anti-MAGA. And so you don't have to work very hard to get into one of those two categories. It may be hard to get out of one once you're in one. And again, that's framing, though. That's you being framed in that area, or a schematic reference to what you are. You know, it's funny that in such a short phrase or turn of words that a person can be sort of condensed as to that's what you are now. You are that. Those two sentences, that's you. But that's how it is posted. And people who are in favor of MAGA or whatnot or how we're getting there, I think those are fair characterizations, apparently, at least looking at responses to tweets. Sometimes he'll take a tweet that was just put on his website, on his Twitter feed, and repost it. Like, look what this is, nobody we know, but he just, look what he said. It was so nice. Look at that.
You have some way of characterizing these tweets when you say that something might have been an insult or it might have been misogynist. How do you actually parse through all of these tweets, or did you have a rubric? Did you run them through like a language analyzer? I'm just curious about that.
No, I didn't. It was just the nature of the word or the tone. And I don't know if you have that chart there with you in terms of the insult tweets, but it was just the word itself or the yes, there. Thank you so much.
So you had a rubric.
Well, I guess I did actually. Maybe I didn't call it that, but yes, you're right. I guess it was a in terms of looking at the word and seeing disgusting, disgraceful, dumb as a rock, dumbest man on television, calling somebody this or that, a liar, a lapdog, and such and such. I was like, that's and I did ask myself that quite a few times going through this. And well, am I just reading that as negative or was it negative?
Right. That's why I was asking.
Right. This guy's a quitter. This guy is sick, and not sick like some of the kids mean today. It's sick,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
No, not that kind of sick. The negative one. He's tainted. He's terrible. He's a traitor. I'm thinking, no, I think that's negative. I think that it is negative. Strikes me that he's saying these things that no one else in any job could say them and remain in that job. You would be fired. You might even be sued, but no one else could say these things and the next day expect to have a job. Even when they question, let's say, for Sarah Sanders or someone and say, should the president really be, using this kind of language? It's sort of playground language or 12-year-old talk. She might respond sometimes by saying, well, he defends himself, so whenever he feels attacked, he's going to attack back. That's how he does. As if that sort of makes it all clear now. Well, thank you. We're still on the playground, though, apparently, and we're still throwing, rocks or whatever.
You say that no one else could say these sorts of things or tweet these sorts of things and keep their job. It seems, though, in politics, that's a sort of a different set of rules.
Yes, yes.
But I also wonder if the implications here aren't more profound, and it may be that we start looking to other people in our lives to have these kinds of discourses. It may be that we want executives to come out swinging to call it as they see it. I mean, I'm already seeing it with some of the younger politicians coming up on the Democratic side.
Yes.
Certainly they seem to be taking a cue from this new mode of discourse. Actually, a lot of celebrities, which is a kind of public figure even beyond a politician, seem to have a lot of latitude with what they can say. If it's not, it seems to me, explicitly racist and misogynistic. And
right.
By that I mean, using a racial epithet
right.
or a homophobic epithet seems to be pretty much over the line. But otherwise, you can walk right up to that line as a celebrity, sports figure, politician. And it seems to be, well, people say stuff and we wouldn't be paying so much attention if they weren't famous and powerful.
What I found disturbing was the results of your statistical analysis, looking at the frequency of phrases and then the frequency of insults, both in the lead up to the elections in the first 100 days and in year one. What comes out, and maybe we all knew this instinctively, but what comes out on the top is fake news or false news. And then right below that, of course, we've got Crooked Hillary and the failing New York Times, but right below that are a number of terms like false, wrong, dishonest, and phony. And certainly we've been told not to believe the evidence of our eyes and ears. But I wonder, in terms of your discussion on schema and on priming and on agenda setting, when you look at these terms emerging as the most frequently used, this, to me, it sort of goes beyond a rhetorical roadblock to really sort of reshaping who we can trust as our authority on the actual truth.
That is
the actual truth.
The actual truth.
As opposed to the other truth.
Well, as opposed to the alternative facts.
The alternative facts of the other truth.
That's true. Well said. Oh, that's a great. I'm glad you reminded me of the fake false news. That was the number one negative and or insulting term that was used by Trump in his tweets through that time period and probably still is. But I think we only need look at other countries where they've had authoritarian regimes. And I hate to bring this up, but I mean, if you study it, how the relationship between authoritarian regimes and the, quote, media in those countries, you see the same kind of philosophy, the schema that those leaders in those countries want to create for their citizens to think about media. Any media that's critical of government or what that leader is doing at that time is an enemy of the people, a phrase that our own president has used numerous times. And those that follow Trump's tweets that are in his party and in his following see the news media more and more as being an impediment because of the way he's characterized them and making up stories and doing false stories just to be political and things of that nature. And so the press, the reputation of the press definitely has come down since Trump began to say these things and less trust out there in general of media, I think. But I haven't done any studies of that. But
I was wondering, that's just your...
That is my opinion, yes.
That's, okay.
Yes, and I think, but it follows that where this would lead us to is the press having fewer rights to criticize the government and be the watchdog of government, which they're supposed to be, and ask questions and whatever the circumstance may be, because generally speaking, people in power don't want to be questioned, and that's true in many situations. But when we start to literally devalue the role of the press and delegitimize them, then you get the public behind it, almost rallying. Yeah, I see what you're. Yeah, and so this is how dictators have come to power, you know, and because the one mechanism, the press, could have been there to question what they were doing. But Trump is certainly not, by far, he is not the only president who's had a rocky relationship with the press, not even close. I mean, there have been many presidents, maybe all of them, but certainly many of them, who have had a lot of negative interactions with them and wish that they would kind of go away and try to put restrictions on what they could talk about. In some of these countries where you have authoritarian regimes, you literally get the press painted as, if they're not telling you favorable things about us, then they must be a lie. It's got to be a lie because we're the greatest leaders ever.
Or like Ellen was suggesting, where we can't even necessarily agree on a common set of facts.
Yes, yes. I mean, what is truth?
That's almost more, your interpretation of those facts could certainly, or the value of those facts or the importance of those facts could vary from person to person, from institution to institution. But it's almost at the point where these sorts of things lead everyone to question if it's even true or not. Even when presented with quotes from a politician, people that have that frame and those associated schema, like a fake news thing, will say, well, he didn't really say that, or worse, and I've heard this, and forget political spectrum. People say, well, he said that, but he didn't mean it.
Right. You took it the wrong way, or you heard it wrong, or it didn't mean what you thought it meant, and such things. Exactly. Great a point on that. And even Rudy Giuliani, when being interviewed one time, said something to the effect, well, what is the truth anyway, or something of that. And you're sort of like, well, the truth is what we call facts, you know, and based on...
It's still there when you go to sleep.
But only I can determine that. And if you're not getting it from me, then you're not getting it. The truth is a dangerous position to hold, I think. But when you start to delegitimize the media, then our last bastion of defense and mechanism for checking government goes out the window. And so, yeah, the press aren't perfect. They make mistakes. They are careless with facts sometimes, but they're their single greatest hope to keep us from being a North Korea or a China or a Russia. Can you imagine the kind of things being said, you know, suggested in the press by Trump coming out in Russia? No, they'd be shot. And that's exactly how they want to do it.
Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org.
If you want to learn more about the topics we've discussed in this particular show, you can find Dr. Darrell Rowe's papers at his website, darrellrowe.wixsite.com/Rowe Research, and that's Rowe, R-O-E. Our theme music is by bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire James Whiten.
So I spend my waking